Okay. Next item. Is this for number? Oh. All right. Next item is number 16. And we're going to take a quick break. We'll let staff get set up for this. We've got a 10-minute break. Okay, folks, why don't we take our seats and let's continue with our meeting. We're on agenda item number 16, Monterey Regional Stormwater Program Update. Mr. Briggs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I wanted to point out that this is a status report, and it's not a hearing. I thought it was appropriate to remind the board of that because we are talking about some violations that the staff has noted and the status of those violations. So I want to make sure it's clear and that you keep in mind as we're discussing this that it's not a hearing. It's a status report, and it's actually a status report that you, the board, requested, I think mainly prompted by the fact that we had those violations listed in our enforcement report a couple of meetings ago. So making the presentation today is our staff person who works with this permit, oversees this permit for the Monterey Regional Stormwater participants, and that staff person is Jennifer Epp. Jennifer.
Good morning.
Morning.
So my name is Jennifer Epp. I'm with the Stormwater Unit, and I'll be presenting item 16 on your agenda today. It's the Monterey Regional Stormwater Participants Group, compliance with the general permit. And as Roger mentioned, this is a status update only. I don't have any proposed action that I'm going to be asking you for today. So today I'll give you a brief update on two items, the first being the Monterey Regional Stormwater Participants Group. And just as a refresher, the entities that participate in this group are the seven cities that are in the Monterey Peninsula area, as well as the County of Monterey. The second item I'll be talking about today is the US EPA audit for the City of Monterey, which is one of those participating entities. And I appreciate the opportunity today to highlight the extensive review that we've undertaken and the oversight that we've had on this program in the recent past. The Monterey Regional Group has been enrolled in the general permit since September of 2006. And since they've been enrolled since this time, we've been able to focus our efforts on their program on compliance review since we're not in the middle of doing enrollment. And as Roger mentioned, the reason why we're here today is you requested back in February that I give you a compliance status update on how the program is doing. So over the past year and a half, the activities that we've done is we performed a fairly comprehensive annual report review. We had follow-up discussions with each of the participating entities based on the comments on that review. We also did focused audits of two of the program components, and we did that for each of the participating entities. So we did eight focused audits. We did that last spring. And as a result of all this review, in September of last year, we issued a notice of violation to the Monterey Regional Group. That notice of violation contained approximately 100 comments that had required follow-up action. And this was a mixture of both violations as well as required program improvements. And we've had numerous discussions over the last 6 months with both the program manager as well as some of the individual entities answering the questions on the notice of violation as well as program compliance. In our review of the response to the notice of violation, we've determined that the response was adequate for approximately half of those comments. But we determined that the response was inadequate for the other half. And the ones that were inadequate were either inadequate because the required information was not provided or they're in violation of not implementing a permit requirement. And for some of those where the response was inadequate, they have demonstrated some progress. Either they did some work, but there's still some remaining work to be done, or with some of those violations, maybe some of the participating entities came into compliance, but the other ones didn't. And the ones that are outstanding are a mix of both kind of minor reporting violations as well as more significant violations. And that's spread about 50-50 as well. About half of them are minor reporting violations, and the other half are more significant. And so as a result, on Monday, we issued a second notice of violation. And you should have received a yellow copy of that today in your packet. Since we issued the notice of violation back in September, Monterey Regional has demonstrated progress in several areas. The remaining two entities have adopted stormwater ordinances. They've made improvements to their monitoring program. They've made improvements in their illicit discharge reporting procedures. All of the entities have now completed their stormwater system mapping. They've agreed to participate in the regional joint effort for hydromodification control, and you'll hear more about that in the item 17, which is next on the agenda. They've also made some changes as far as how they determine which days to spray pesticides and which to not. They've also made some improvements to their contract language for street maintenance projects. They've held teacher training for some of the local schools. They've improved their reporting of program implementation. And they've also demonstrated an increased awareness of the permit requirements themselves. They've also increased their consistency amongst the participating entities on how they're interpreting the permit requirements. The notice of violation that we issued on Monday highlighted the priority areas where they still need to improve. And these areas that were highlighted were the construction site stormwater control, and this includes both site plan review as well as construction site inspection. The engagement of the general public as well as stakeholder involvement in actual shaping their program. The assessing of the program's effectiveness used to actually drive program improvements. The city of Delray Oaks has had a lack of response to the notice of violation and has had low participation in Monterey Regional meetings. The training and awareness of municipal staff of the permit requirements. And some of the participating entities have not yet begun their business inspections. And lastly, while they've done extensive source tracking for one outfall, they have not performed source tracking on other outfalls. And similar to the first NOV, or notice of violation, excuse me, each violation that we've identified in Monday's letter requires a follow-up action on their part. So we've specified this is what you need to do in order to come into compliance for each of those items. So in summary, both the addressed violations as well as the outstanding violations are a mix of both minor reporting violations and more significant items. They have demonstrated progress, and they've made program improvements that will result in increased water quality protection. But they have some remaining important work to do to address the outstanding violations. Staff will review their response to this second notice of violation. We will continue to track their compliance, and based on how they do moving forward, we will evaluate if any further enforcement actions are warranted. So before going on to the City of Monterey specific item, I'm just going to see if you had any questions about the group.
Mr. Shallcross.
I'm really concerned about the Delray Oaks. Is there any reason that they've given why they're not attending the meetings and being responsive, or do you know?
They've had some change in staff, and I haven't really gotten any good reasons.
Okay, I'm just curious. Yeah, thank you.
Maybe Mr. Reeves will know that when he comes up to talk to us. Dr. Hunter.
Thank you, Chair Young. Just wondering if you know off the top of your head, Jennifer, You note that they have been thirst tracking on one outfall, and the remainder of the outfalls have not been addressed. How many others are there?
They have a requirement in the swamp that, or excuse me, their stormwater management plan, where each participating entity is supposed to look at an outfall each year. And what they've been doing so far is they've been looking at one of those. What you'll probably hear from the city today is that they disagree and they think that they only should be looking at the one. But in staff's interpretation of what the permit says, it says that each participating entity will be doing source tracking. And my understanding is that they are making plans to do that in the upcoming year, that they are planning to make some changes on that.
Okay. So how many are there? How many outfalls?
One city does not have any outfalls, so there would be six. There would be six other cities that have outfalls. There are many, many outfalls if you add them all up.
Thank you. Okay.
Do you happen to have a slide that has the six minimum control measures, if that's the right term, that fall within the swamp?
I don't have a slide, but I could probably do them from memory.
From memory, okay.
Yeah. There's public participation and involvement.
Right.
There's construction site stormwater control.
Okay.
There's municipal housekeeping and operations. Which two?
Illicit discharge.
The illicit discharge reporting and detection.
And public education as well.
Okay. So with the, how are they doing generally with the illicit detection component requirement?
I mean, as far as how are they detecting illicit discharges and are they going after them?
How are they doing with their permit requirements?
I think they've made some progress, but I think there's some progress to be made. They realized about a year ago that the system that they were using to have people call in and tell them that there was an illicit discharge, that service was no longer working. So they have made some changes and centralized it so that the calls go to a 911 dispatch and then go to the various cities. So I think they've made some progress in that, but I think it's too soon to tell whether or not those changes are going to result in.
Are any of in the mix of minor and significant violations that you noticed, are any of them related to illicit detection requirements?
Let's see. The ones that we highlighted, just the source tracking would be the one that would be related to that item.
Okay.
And in general, you know, they're doing this great work and collecting a lot of really good data. What we're looking for them is to use that data to their advantage. They're collecting a lot of good information, but then to actually use that information and figure out, okay, well, we've got some high hits here. What are the potential sources? And like I said, they have been doing some really good work at one of the outfalls. They have been fairly extensively looking at the Steinbeck outfall, where they had some high hits on their data, and they really have been very diligent about trying to track that down. I think they've realized that it's a little bit easier said than done to try to figure out what's causing some of these problems.
So, do they have a mechanism in place where they're considering the data that they generate, and then on their own coming up with remedial actions or changes to their swamp that they've let you know about?
This is one of the things that I've been commenting on and pushing them to do is, you know, so what are you getting from the information? How is it shaping your program? And I think the response that I've gotten is that the data is fairly young. You know, they've only been collecting it for a few years, and so to really look at long-term trends and really determine how water quality is being changed, that there isn't enough data yet to determine that. But I do think they have at least some instantaneous information where they can see at a particular outfall, okay, we've got a high hit of something here, let's try to figure out what the source of it. So I think they have that information available to them, and I think that's what they would be using in the upcoming years when they look at other outfalls.
With business inspections, what's happening? Are they not conducting any?
Yeah, so the plan has them do business inspections throughout the whole permit term and basically complete them all by the time that they're done. And as of the last reporting, at the end of year three, two of the entities had done zero of their business inspections so far.
Okay.
So they said that they're going to do them in the last 2 years, but they haven't started.
And by entities of the cities that belong
Yeah,
to
so the eight participating entities. Six of them have begun their business inspections, and two of them, at least as of their reporting that they did in September, had done zero. And they've indicated that they do plan on making that up and getting out there and doing them in the last couple years. But that's way to be seen.
Any other board questions? Okay.
So we have part two, which
part
is
two.
Zeroing in on the city of Monterey.
Okay.
Go back to, yeah. So we were very fortunate last September to have the expertise and perspective of a U.S. EPA contractor who performs audits of Phase 2 municipalities from around the U.S. for EPA. So we were very fortunate to have this expertise come to our region and perform an audit for the city of Monterey. And EPA staff as well as water board staff attended that audit. U.S. EPA indicated that they had funds for an audit and for their contractor to come out and do an audit, and they wanted to do an audit of one of the participating entities in the Monterey Regional Program. And they asked staff to choose which city or county that would be. And we selected the city of Monterey due to several factors, one of which was based on some deficiencies that we observed when we went and did our audits earlier in the spring, as well as the relative population size of Monterey on the peninsula, and the fact that the city of Monterey performs some stormwater services for some of the other entities. There are a lot of small communities, and so there's a lot of contracting out of construction site inspection amongst the different cities. As a result of the audit that was performed, U.S. EPA issued an audit report at the end of February and sent that to both the city as well as the water board. The audit report identified as the most significant deficiencies were related to the construction site stormwater control. The report also provided many, many recommendations. And an example of a recommendation would be, you know, they went and visited a municipal facility and they had some recommendations on how to improve source control at a particular site and do a couple of things. The city submitted a letter to EPA in response to the audit report, and the city has indicated that they are reviewing their program based on the audit report, and that they had already addressed some of the audit report's recommendations, that they jumped in and did some of those things right away. The letter, however, doesn't demonstrate that they are or that they have corrected the program deficiencies yet. So we coordinated with EPA on the response to the audit report, and EPA was supportive of us issuing a notice of violation to the city of Monterey. And so we did that, I think about a month ago, or last month, and that was included in your original staff packet. The notice of violation that we issued to the city focuses on their construction site stormwater program, specifically the BMP, or best management practice, implementation at the construction sites, the construction site plan review in-house, as well as the construction site inspection and enforcement. The next steps with the city is that we will be meeting with them at the end of the month to answer any questions that they have on the notice of violation, and we will be performing follow-up visits later on in the year to see how they have complied with the items in the notice of violation. So we will be reviewing their response later on this year. And before I answer questions on the city of Monterey, I'll just summarize a little bit what we've been doing for this entire group. You know, we've performed a very thorough review of this entire program to determine how the entities are doing with compliance. And the group has demonstrated improvements. We have seen some good progress over the past year and a half, but they definitely do still have some work to do. There still are some areas where they need to address outstanding violations. We'll continue to track the program compliance. And based on this response to this second notice of violation, as well as the violation we issued to the city, we will evaluate if further enforcement is warranted. And with that, I'll take any additional questions you have about either the City of Monterey specific audit or outstanding items from the...
Anything? Any board questions? Okay, thank you. All right, Mr. Briggs.
I have our cards here.
I've got a few speaker cards. Mr. Reeves, why don't you come up? He asked for 4 minutes. I said I would give it to him. And then Mike Avila, and then Steve Schimmick.
Chair Young and members of the board, thank you very much. I'll try to keep my comments brief. I think to use an analogy, which I'm so fond of, we are in the fourth year of our permit, which makes us basically a three-year-old. And this permit is going to last a very long time. Maybe not this permit, but this process is going to outlast any of us in this room. So with that in mind, we've stumbled a little bit. I'll admit to that. We can stand to make some improvements. But I think we've taken all of the comments to heart, and we are striving to do that. I'd like to take a moment to introduce some of the people that came with me today. We have Steve Leiker with the County of Monterey, Sidney Moe with the City of Seaside. We have Heidi Niegemeyer, our new manager of our Stormwater Permit Participants Group, and Tricia Wotan with the City of Monterey. And then also today is Mike Avila with Avila Construction. So part of the reason for me introducing those people is to show you that we are increasing staffing, too. The City of Monterey now has Tricia Wotan working full-time on this, as well as pretty much myself. I no longer do engineering, even though that's in my title. I'm actually the stormwater person, and that's as I'm known by. County of Monterey has also added additional staff and resources to this. So I think you're starting to see us ramping up efforts here because we recognize that the resources need to be put towards it. I'd like to cover a little bit of the points, though, some of the good things that we've been doing. In Monterey itself, which is also part of the region, we've created a consolidated trash management program, and that was actually the Canary Rail Company that did that. One of our biggest problems at the somewhat infamous Steinbeck outfall was bacteria. So a lot of that was coming from trash, actually liquid waste, if you will, coming out of the trash bins, falling out onto the street. So now they've got a program where they actually collect all of those bins, they bring them up to a consolidated area where there's actually a trash compactor that has sewer drainage to it, and so that's no longer going in the ocean. We have been increasing our source tracking, and I have to differ a little bit on the source tracking issue. Pacific Grove's done source tracking through Urban Watch. We've actually tracked bacterial sources upstream quite a bit. City of Monterey has done its own source tracking. Actually, this summer, we have an orthophosphate source tracking program that we're going to start. So in answer to one of the questions, have we been looking at the data, we do look at the data, and we've been noticing that we have high orthophosphate. So we actually have a summer intern whose sole purpose is going to be to determine where geographically in our city that's coming from, and also the actual sources. Is it coming from fertilizer? Is it coming from groundwater, which it actually a significant amount of it seems to be. We're increasing collaborative efforts with our neighboring agencies, the City of Santa Cruz, Salinas, and San Luis Obispo. As I mentioned before, we now have a full-time program manager. Before, a little over a year ago, we had a part-time person with that, but we realized as a group that we needed more resources. We've created innovative ways to provide community service. When we do find violators, we've asked them to, instead of paying a fine, they actually have gone out and done public education and actually helped clean things up. We've networked with nonprofits to help deliver our work groups, our workshops. I'll just kind of skip through some of this. The City of Pacific Grove and Carmel are working with the Marine Sanctuary on a copper source study. That's another contaminant that we've noted. We've addressed the concerns raised in the September NOV by providing refresher training courses. The City of Monterey, in conjunction with our member entities, we're actually developing a computerized training system. One of our big challenges is delivering training to those personnel who aren't in the immediate area. City of Monterey actually has personnel at Fort Hunter Liggett working at the Army facility. So one of our challenges is how do we get the training to them? So we've actually on our own developed a computerized training program so that they can log on and go through training. We're working to get marine debris PSAs run in the local hotel rooms. We have, to address the attendance issue, and I'll address the issue about Delray Oaks. Actually, we've had very good attendance recently. The city of Delray Oaks has had actually their city manager attend our meetings. I can't say that it's been 100% attendance, but I know he's been there through the vast majority of the meetings. I would say close to 100%. Just skipping down to some of the City of Monterey achievements that we've had, to address the construction oversight issues, we did need to have some improvement in it, and we need to improve more on that. And thankfully, with Tricia's help, we've developed new processes, and I look forward to going over those with Ms. Epp when she comes up on the 24th. We've developed new inspection systems, which I think will ensure that construction sites will receive much better oversight, will be much more proactive in terms of addressing issues before they become problems. And I believe that in relationship to the audit was very good in that it did draw our attention to some weaknesses that we had. But I can't say that we had any water quality violations as a result of any of those construction sites. Yes, there were some tattered BMPs in place that needed to be improved on, but you have to keep in mind that the audit was in September. It was bone dry at that time. We had already been talking to the property owner about those. So without belaboring it any further, I'd like to ask if you have any questions.
Tell us a little bit more about your construction site inspection program. Your staff, once construction permits are issued, does your staff inspect every site, 50% of the sites? How does your program read that way?
Well, the way it has been done, and we're going to shift away from that, is that the contractor calls for an inspection. So it was really more driven by the contractor calling for an inspection. So that was part of the problem, is that when the contractor calls us, it's when they want to hang sheetrock or something, and it's not necessarily the best time to be reviewing BMPs. So Tricia and myself, we are now going to have organized reviews of construction sites prior to the rainy season in particular to make sure that things are in place. We're also instituting changes in the way that we do inspect sites from the building inspection point of view. So if a contractor, say, calls for their sheetrock to be inspected, the inspector will also make sure that the BMP is in place so that when they start taping and mudding the seams, we know how they're going to dispose of that drywall paste. Same thing goes true before they even start putting concrete in the ground for the foundations. There will be a new checkbox on the inspection card that the inspector will look at. And not only will they be looking at the rebar in the ground to make sure that it's ready for concrete, but they will also make sure there's a BMP in place so that when the ready-mix truck arrives, there's a place to put the waste concrete.
Now, every time the contractor calls for an inspection, there's various inspections and sign-offs that go on through a project. Is that inspector going to be continually looking at the stormwater BMPs?
They will be looking at it at the key times. For instance, when they call for a foundation inspection, which is when one would expect the concrete to come, there will be a go/no-go decision there. If they have the BMPs in place and they're adequate BMPs and they're functioning, then we'll let them go ahead with the pour. If not, then we won't let them go ahead with the pour. Okay, then from there you have your rough framing that goes up. Usually the next inspection we would do is for like rough electrical, rough plumbing, before they put sheetrock on. They put the sheetrock on, and before they can do any of the taping, we will have another stop, go, no-go inspection that'll say you need to have the BMP in place for your drywaller so that when they start doing the taping and texturing, they can dispose of the drywall plaster waste. Same thing goes true for the exterior stuccoing.
And have all your inspectors been trained in stormwater BMPs?
Yes, and coincidentally, today is a very good training session that's being given up in Salinas right now, so a number of our people are attending. As a matter of fact, all of our inspection staff is attending that today.
Okay. And then my other...
All of them from Monterey. I'm sorry. I'm speaking on behalf of my...
Right,
got to keep my role straight here.
Right. And then as far as... I mean, the issue of copper heavy metals, that's been known for years. I mean, that was in the model...
Urban runoff program.
The model urban runoff program.
Right.
Which is many years old. So what are you doing specifically to get copper and other heavy metals up off the streets?
Well, as you know, copper is probably one of the most vexing issues when it comes to stormwater.
Right.
You're probably aware of the brake pad partnership with Casca. Coincidentally, also, we have a postgraduate student who's doing her thesis on copper sources, and she is using part of the Canary Wharf area as well as Carmel to try to determine where are the higher concentrations of copper occurring. We think that most of the copper in our stormwater is coming from brake pads, not from architectural elements. Because when we look at these areas with high copper concentrations, there are a few copper architectural elements, but it's not commensurate with the amount of copper contamination. You can go to other parts of our system where there's just as many copper architectural elements, and the copper concentrations won't be as high. So that kind of goes to the point of, do we look at the data? Yes, I can assure you, we look at that data. We are getting tired of being flagellated with the data. We understand the problems. We're trying to find out now, how can we get to the source? How can we reduce those levels? The copper one, I think, is going to be one of the, and zinc, because zinc, I think, is coming from tire rubber primarily. So both of those are probably issues that we would look to the state to regulate, and my understanding is the state will be regulating copper in friction materials like brake pads and clutch discs, which I think, myself, is the answer.
Okay. I would agree with you getting to the source, but what about street sweeping?
We have a very rigorous street sweeping program in Monterey, at least. We sweep the business district like Cannery Row 5 days a week.
And have you done any monitoring to show whether street sweeping is effective in reducing the levels of copper and zinc in stormwater?
We will be looking at that with this person's thesis that she's doing. Matter of fact, one of the things we brought out to her is that as she goes out there and samples, it's going to most likely affect her results if she goes out 10 minutes after the street sweepers come by or comes by on a Sunday late in the day when the street sweeper hasn't been there for almost 2 days. So we will be looking at that. We'll see if there's a good correlation or not.
Right. Okay. Dr. Hunter.
Thank you, Tom, for all the information you brought today. One of the items I noticed that continued on to the second notice of violation is engagement of the public stakeholder. Your stakeholder process, and I think you mentioned it in the run-through of items you've achieved, but can you give me more details or give us more details on how you're going to address
sure.
this? I'm not sure what the deficiency is, because I haven't heard
There's a provision in our stormwater management plan that we get 40 participants to come to an event. I believe it's once a year. And we have had some problems with doing that. We have tried many different things. We've even used free food. We've advertised extensively to try to get people to go to come to these meetings. The only one that's worked so far is one that will actually, there's two. There was one that was organized by the Cannery Row Company, actually, and they even hosted the room, and they got the restaurants together. We had very good attendance at that restaurant workshop. And it was really more because we made connections inside the trade circle itself. So we had a kind of an insider who could then talk to the restaurants and get them to come. That so far has been one of our most successful ways of getting people. The other one was at CSUMB, where we had a lot of interested people. They were students. They were probably environmental studies students, I would guess. And we had a very good attendance there. Now, we've received a criticism that isn't a very broad category of the citizens. I would submit maybe, but maybe not. I mean, I went to college too, and I became an engineer. It doesn't mean I wouldn't have gone to a meeting like that. I mean, they're citizens like the rest of us too. The point is, we are trying as best we can to get these people to attend meetings. I'm very glad to see Mr. Avila here. He's a general contractor. I'm hoping that he'll go back, speak to some of his contracting friends, and we can hold another workshop aimed at contractors and get better attendance at those meetings, too.
So that sounds somewhat like the education part of outreach to the community, but I'm wondering about stakeholder involvement. So do you have an advisory group that has been integral to the implementation and review of achievements and kind of giving input to the way in which the city or the regional group is approaching the effective implementation, the pace, the schedule, meeting schedule, and so forth? Are you getting, do you have an advisory group?
Well, we have our, yes, we have our board meetings, which, you know, we meet every month. And they're public open meetings. Mm-hmm. Mr. Schimbeck, who's also in the audience, is mm-hmm. a fairly regular attendee of those. Mm-hmm. I can't honestly tell you that we get a lot of people from the public attending those meetings. Mm-hmm. They're well-known. I don't believe we advertise in papers for them. We do have the annual workshop meeting that we hold in November. We do advertise that extensively. And for whatever reason, we haven't gotten a huge turnout at those meetings either. It's very unfortunate. I think that there's people lead busy lives, and I don't know that the water quality issue is on the top of people's agenda list. I can't explain why. Yeah. It just seems to be the case.
Jennifer, can you give us a little more information about why it was listed in the second round, in the second NOV?
Yeah, so the comment results from their annual meeting, and the suggestion that, so we had noted back in September with the initial notice of violation that, you know, there really wasn't any public helping to drive this process, any sort of advisory group, and so we'd actually made the suggestions, like, we know there are interested party groups in Monterey. I mean, even just from our own interested parties list, there's all sorts of organizations there, and we suggested that they contact those agencies and personally invite them to participate. Hey, you know, the Heal the Bay, and I mean, there's a whole host of these organizations in Monterey, and so that was the suggestion that we did, that we gave to them. And what we saw as a result is instead they held the meeting at the university and required a classroom of students to go to it, and so they got 40 people to attend, and it didn't really meet the objective of, well, let's really, you know, I know that they've publicly noticed and they've put it in the newspapers, but they haven't demonstrated any reaching out to any of these interested parties that could potentially be interested. And I would be surprised if they couldn't get more participation if they, you know, contacted the surf riders and the whole handful of groups, because it is the Monterey area and there are these groups. So that's really what I'm looking for them to do more of, is to actively try to get interested parties to attend and get their input. And I think it could help improve their program.
I take it, Monterey, you have a local government channel on cable?
Yes, we do.
And you probably post your agendas for various government meetings. Are you posting this meeting?
I don't believe we do.
Is that something you could do? Include that?
We probably do.
Because you're not noticing the meetings except for the annual one.
Right.
So I would suggest that perhaps, I mean, that shouldn't cost anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to have that included in your television publication on cable would be an easy thing to do.
Sure.
And then what about Earth Day? Santa Barbara has a big Earth Day festival that goes on. I take it you have the same thing in Monterey?
We do. I'm not sure that there's a really organized Earth Day event in Monterey. I think the main area, if I believe right, is probably in Santa Cruz. I don't think the city of Monterey didn't have like an organized Earth Day event. Pardon? We have, yes, right. Coastal Cleanup Day
right.
is really one of our big...
We have those, too. Yeah, those are helpful, but, I mean, what I've seen with the Earth Day Festival, where I live, is that you have a lot of green construction,
mm-hmm.
people coming out, and water quality people. The city and all the cities in the county all have booths you know, and they're able to talk about what they're doing, and they can talk up water quality endlessly.
Well, and actually, next week we have American Public Works Week.
Right.
We have a booth set up in our farmers market for stormwater.
Okay.
So, I mean,
maybe there are some other big festivals like that that you have through the year. I don't know what they are, but.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, there are two dimensions to that. One is just spreading the word more broadly so that you do connect with people that are inclined to get involved. And then recruiting or advertising that you have an advisory panel or an advisory committee that is actually functioning as part of your review and discussion of how to proceed with implementation. Mm-hmm. I think, for me, that's what that refers to. And I'm hoping that's what staff is looking for. And I think, you know, there are some groups that obviously come to mind. The marine environment is, you know, one dimension of stormwater impacts. So that would be, I think, you know, low-hanging fruit. They're going to be very interested in that, in what you're doing, because those are the changes they're advocating for. And they have good, solid constituents that are really focused on these issues. But also, you know, across the eight groups, I'm guessing they all have, you know, these issues that can galvanize a strong advisory panel, people that are going to stay with the process for maybe, you know, a year, maybe the whole time. But I think that would be the kind of thing I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm. Good. And I think the suggestion to put it on our public television is a very good one.
Yeah. Any other board questions down from this end?
Okay, Mr. Shawcross.
Okay. thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. And we got a couple of speakers. Mike Avila, did you want to speak to the board?
Hi, my name is Mike Avila. I'm one of the principals in Avila Construction, and we were the general contractor, or are the general contractor on the site that was reviewed by the EPA folks and Jennifer during their initial audit. And I just came to be here in case you guys had any questions for us and to kind of support the process. I want everybody to know that the Tom in particular and the city staff has certainly done their job in making sure we're doing our job. And if you have any questions, I'm here. So that's the only reason I
Dr. Hunter.
Thank you for making the trip.
Thank you for making the trip. Just curious, what's your response or reaction to the proposed changes in the differences in the way inspections are triggered so that you'll see a more organized, more systematic set of inspections coming your way?
I think the proposed solution is good. And, you know, I'm from the private sector, obviously, and we want to be efficient, and that sounds like a very efficient way to do it. I will say that prior to any of this coming about formally, when we started that project back in 07, Tom insisted on a pre-meeting. We met with the building official, Tom, and his building inspector, prior to ever starting the job, specifically about best management practices. It was kind of new, you know. I'll say it was kind of new to the you know, there was a formal plan that was approved, and they came out and reviewed it with us. And our superintendent was fully aware of it. Had a binder on site, was keeping notes, and actually, he's an old friend of mine. The superintendent has worked with me at a previous company, kind of one of the old dogs in the show. And had been involved in some areas, some projects in the Bay Area that had stormwater problems years and years ago. So he was very proactive on the physical side of making sure that things were in place during the winter seasons. And we actually went through, you know, it was a very long process. This particular report was written, the project was about 98% done. It was paved and the majority of the landscaping on the project was in. So we were past a lot of the hurdles, but he was aware of it and on top of it, and Tom made sure of that. I will comment that we did not receive an immediate notice of violation. However, Tom acted as if we did. So within days of their visit, he was hitting us either by phone or on site every other day to make sure that everything, all the verbal concerns were addressed. And so we kind of thought it was a done issue because it was, he was after it, believe me.
And just so that I can understand, as a contractor, did you have any kind of training or orientation, or what information did you get to help you understand what the stormwater construction site criteria were going to be for you?
We utilized the civil engineers program that was put in place that was approved by all the entities. We used that as the basis of it. We had a binder, you know, on site in our trailer throughout the project. Mm-hmm. That was probably, in my mind, the most prominent violation was that we had just recently moved our trailer off site just a couple days before these folks got there. One of the buildings was fully occupied. The other building was just in the finishing stages of the shell, and we were moving off-site, so his binder wasn't there. So that was that was probably the most prominent violation that I saw. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, physically, most of the things that were out there were in the finishing stages.
Okay. Thank you.
So prior to you getting to the site and getting this binder, had you had any prior training with respect to stormwater management or protection?
No, I think I can say no.
Yeah,
and as a requirement of the NOV we received in December, there was training required, and we had a training class for our entire staff as well as a few of the city staff at our office.
So is that training triggered by the contractors having to go to the government and ask for a training session? I mean, how does that work?
We actually contracted for it privately. And I actually had a little discussion beforehand with Jennifer about kind of how all of us contractors can be notified of these, the state permit and now the new state permit. I have people at a class today, the same class that was mentioned for the new state permit in Salinas. And it's nice that it's in Salinas. Normally we have a struggle to get anything local. And there is one today that a lot of people are attending.
Okay. So Jennifer's, is the contracting industry getting noticed?
Well, because
the training is available for them?
Because there's going to be a change in July to the construction general permit, training is definitely on the forefront and focus. So the training that people are referring to is a training that's put on by Caltrans and URS, and I think this is the fifth and final year that training will be held. And I think that was part of some sort of settlement agreement that they've had to put on this training. But there has been an increased participation and interest from the contracting community in these trainings. So there's that training that's been going on. We did one in Santa Barbara yesterday. There's one in Salinas today, and then there was also one here in San Luis Obispo. But in addition, the state board has been making the rounds and has gone to each of the regions and had a meeting here as well to help explain the new requirements of the general permit and what types of things were going to be needed. And as far as training on the new permit, there is going to be additional training, and my understanding is that CASQA is going to be leading a lot of those, and those are going to be happening throughout the upcoming future.
Yeah. Is that training for the contractors or
yes.
for government?
Yeah, for the contractors.
Okay. Because that's important
yes.
that there always be training and education available in perpetuity.
Yes.
Okay.
So if I might suggest, there's to make it so that it's privately done, the training, there's various levels of sophistication in our business. There's general contractors and grading contractors that are very small and very big, have different levels of resources. If it was a state training type of situation that was available, that would be great. The training, which is happening today, it sounds like it's going to end. We actually had a little discussion just prior to this, and in my mind, it would be productive to make it a requirement of all contractors in those categories to have a certification. That way it would make it so that everyone, but then you also have to make the training available.
Hmm.
I mean, it has to be there. It's just, right. Those classes don't just appear.
Right.
Yeah. So it's, and in my mind, it should be attached to your license online. You can go check the contractor's license board, and you could tell if somebody's been trained.
Hmm.
But by the nature of the permit that I've read, It's not just one person in our firm that needs to be trained.
Right.
We're talking about thousands and thousands of people that need to be trained.
Right, right. Something I'm curious about. At some point, well, now that you've been through this process with this particular project, and you have a sense for what stormwater BMPs look like, and you reviewed your blueprints and plans and drawings, is there anything that should have been included in the design phase of the project that would have made implementation or installation of BMPs a little easier, a little less costly, a little more efficient?
No, I don't think you can say that.
Okay.
I think that the projects, any project of significance is fluid. And so the BMPs are going to have to move.
Okay.
You know, it's not something you can do it once and it's done. There's an ongoing maintenance thing, and that can't be drawn. You can draw the initial program, but it has to be managed. The folks on the ground have to manage it. And so by the folks on the ground, I mean the cooperative effort between my folks and the local jurisdiction. And my folks being subcontractors all the way down the line.
Now, of course, Mr. Avila is referring to the stormwater BMPs, and we also have the hydro modification BMPs, which maybe don't directly involve him. But
so can you clarify that for me? The
hydro modification BMPs are BMPs designed to help retain water on site and to treat water on site.
I have some very strong opinions about that, but you may want to take that offline. I think that it's site specific.
Right.
Works very well in sandy soils. Works very well in certain environments, but is going to cause some real problems for a lot of people down the line in clay soils and when the rules, as I interpret them, are pretty rigid and say no water goes off sites. In some areas, that's physically very difficult.
Right.
And probably compromises the project in the long term.
Right.
From a quality perspective.
Well, we're aware the clay soils present a lot of challenges, but somehow we got to
figure out a program somewhere in between.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Any other board questions? Nothing. Mr. Jeffries. Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Avila. Mr. Shimmick.